God, you know, as we just sang these songs, maybe some of us didn't know all the lyrics, but God, we said, oh, we're halfway there. We're living on a prayer. And that's really what we're doing here right now. I mean, we're in the midst of this crazy, crazy journey. And God, we're in week four. We're halfway to the completion of the journey and the beginning of the next phase of Crosspoint. And God, we're living on a prayer. We're talking about it's a trust thing today. And for many of us, God, we need to take this step in trust today. And so I'm going to ask that wherever we are in our spiritual orientation, wherever we find ourselves, God, that you would just meet us exactly where we are, because that's what you do. Pray these things in your name. Amen. So as I said, we're in week four of this crazy journey, and you know, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. I'm trying to be real clear up front each week that one of my goals is to help all of you come to an understanding of how you may or may not choose to be a part of helping financially fund this next step for Crosspoint. You know, as we talk about building into a warehouse facility just north here, just north of the mall, and a place that's going to build into people, a place that's going to continue to see increased change lives, and we just feel like this is a step that God's asked us to take, and it's got $500,000 price tag just to shape the environment. So these next weeks, we're gearing toward June 6th, where the data is going to come in. And I'm hoping that a large percentage of this community will make a sacrificial financial three-year commitment, saying this is what our family, or this is what I, as single, can do to help make this God-sized dream a reality. You know, we've been really clear. We're not guilting anyone. We're not manipulating. What we are doing is getting really passionate. I get really excited when I see what God is doing, what he's already doing in this community. And, you know, because if we're honest about it, this is something that's bigger than just money. I mean, you know, God wouldn't ask us to take this step if he didn't know how it was already going to be funded. This is about us making sure that money is not in God's place in our hearts. And so that's why we're on a journey right now. And on June 6th, the data is going to come in, and God will have additional data on that day that will validate whether or not our hearts are with God. Whether or not our hearts, because he says, you know, where your heart is, your treasure is there as well. And so June 6th is a big day. We're gearing toward that day. And you know, there's been some crazy, crazy things happening. In fact, crazy money stories coming in. If you've been tracking with us, we had this crazy money thing, which you'll hear more about today. But we've had a number of stories coming in, and every story is cool. I mean, every time I read one of these crazy money stories that you send through our website, we're just blown away at what God is doing, what we thought would be a cool learning experience, and you're blessing people all over this community, and actually it's bleeding all over the country. And so here's a story. This is a cool Mother's Day story. We figured those of you that are mothers or have ever been away from your children, that you would really find connection with this. Here's what somebody wrote. They said, after Crosspoint set the crazy money challenge in front of me, I was filled with fear. It's really interesting because I never thought fear would be what happened when we gave you cash. But people repeatedly have been saying, man, we're anxious. I had a lot of fear. I was afraid of what I was going to have to do with this money that you gave us. She writes, what if my idea wasn't good enough, or what if I didn't use this gift the best way that I could? What if I was taking the easy way out? After much thinking and keeping my eyes open to God's opportunity, today I saw what my crazy money will do. As I was sitting with a group of eighth graders watching CNN News, student news, I saw the company that needed my gift. I've given my money to an organization called United Through Read. United Through Read is a company that tapes military parents reading books to their children at home while the parents are away. The quiet moment that is missing when parents are away is now available. Having this gift to support this is so much more than just something aiding this company. It's changing the lives of children through a parent's gift of love and investment into this passion of reading for them. I'm thankful for what God has given me, how I could use this gift in this way. Thank you, Crosspoint, for helping make it happen. I mean, cool stories like this coming in all over the place, how people taking this small gift that we gave you and said, hey, I'm going to go out and make maximum impact with this. A few years ago, there's a Newsweek article that was really fascinating. It was titled "A Millionaire Moment," and here's a snippet that came out of this article in Newsweek magazine. It said, "Here's a get rich quick tip. If you want to become a millionaire, perhaps you should consider writing a book about millionaires. After all, millionaire mania has become the Harry Potter of personal finance publishing. Publishers are finding any excuse to put the word millionaire in titles these days. Check out Amazon.com and you'll see dozens of books that have nothing to do with money with millionaire in them, though. And so they go and list all these books. A couple of them were The 401k Millionaire, 365 Ways to Become a Millionaire. There's even one, you know, called said Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I mean, millionaires is kind of the craze over the last few years. And the question this creates is why this national craze over $1 million? I mean, why is that becoming such a focus? Well, one of the contributing authors to this article, Paul Skirvich, a sociology professor at Boston College, here's what he said. He said, these books are really modern-day religious manuals. They tell us how to be virtuous. So why the craze over $1 million? Because America is a religious nation, and the most popular god in our nation is money. I mean, your God is whatever it is that is important to you. Your God is whatever it is that's your ultimate priority. Last week we looked at, what's my ultimate priority? Can I make God my ultimate priority in this journey? Your God is whatever you trust in. In fact, take a look at these phrases right here. You know, these might be phrases that are familiar to you. You could say, God makes us feel loved. And most of us agree with that. God makes us feel important. God makes us feel secure. But how else could you fill in that blank where God is? My house makes me feel loved. My house makes me feel important. My house makes me feel secure. How about social status? You know, the neighborhood I live in makes me feel loved. The neighborhood I live in makes me feel important. The neighborhood I live in makes me feel secure. How about money? Money makes me feel loved. Anybody ever connect with that? Money makes me feel important. Money makes me feel secure. I mean, you know, it's something that happens. When we have a lot of money, you know, it's almost like we're like, wow, someone is smiling on me and I'm important. I mean, it's almost like it's this thing that makes us feel all of these things that God designed to come from Him. And so as we're in this series, this crazy journey, we're halfway through, and I know what some of us have got to be thinking. I know for some of us, there's a lot of people really excited about this, but I know there's some of us that are just struggling. And you know, we have this vested interest in thinking negative thoughts about this journey we're on, this campaign. We have a vested interest in thinking negative thoughts about the feasibility of this project actually coming to be. Maybe some of us even had negative thoughts about the people that are leading this campaign. And you know, you have to ask yourself, why am I having these negative thoughts? If that's where you are, why would you think negatively about this? Well, there's a reason. Because these things give reason to part with your God, which is money. I mean, it touches a real deep nerve within us. In fact, there's probably a reason why this little phrase is on the back of every dollar bill, in God we trust. You have to ask yourself, what's the God that I trust in? So in week 4, we're going to be taking a look today at what we really believe in. What is it that we trust in? What is the thing that helps us feel important, helps us feel secure, helps us feel like we're loved? And so as we look at this, there's 3 questions I want us to kind of process through. And in fact, whenever we think about parting with our money, being charitable and giving a part of what God has entrusted to us away, whether it be to Crosspoint, to Riley Children's Hospital, United Way, whatever it might be, there's 3 possible approaches, 3 questions that we have to wrestle through with. They kind of determine our trust level. In a sense, the answers of this flow out of the from whom and the from what has ownership of our stuff and that which we believe we own. And it really dictates what our priorities are as well. And so 3 competing questions that I want us to kind of wrestle through today. The first question is this: what can I afford? Yeah, I ran across some interesting statistics over the last few months as I've been prepping for this series. In fact, one that was really fascinating is that the giving in proportion to income over the last decade or so has actually been less than giving in proportion to income was back in 1921 and 1933 in the Great Depression. That just blew me out of the water, that we actually, percentage of our income, proportion to whatever we make today, is actually less today than what people during the Great Depression gave away charitably. I mean, it's fascinating, and that's beginning to grow. We've seen growth in that over the last few years. There's statistics that say 1 out of every born-again Christians, people who call themselves followers of Christ, have never given to their church. And then we also see that only 9% of born-again Christians, people who call themselves followers of Christ, actually give a full tithe. And that's pretty reasonably true here at Crosspoint. I mean, that's pretty much where we fall on that as well, at least from what we can see. And you have to ask yourself, why is this? It's because we give what we can afford. And what can we afford? Well, usually it's anything that's left over after I take care of myself. And so oftentimes we're like, well, what can I afford? Well, I'm going to give after I move into that next house that I really need to have. And I'm going to give after I buy that next new updated model of a car. I'm going to give after I get that great Blu-ray DVD system with the surround sound to finish out my family room. I'm going to give after I buy my summer wardrobe because that's important. And then, of course, you have fall wardrobe. Of course, after that's winter wardrobe. And then I have to make sure I'm funding my kids' college. And then, you know, on and on and on, I'm going to give after, and then we say whatever is left over at the end, that's what I'm going to give off of. And so, you know, here's the reality. You know, when if we live in this way, then we're always making the priority myself. And so the Bible, it gives us a model for this. It gives us a model for giving. It says, here's the model for how you can give and not make God the end of whatever you can afford at the end of the year. In fact, if you have a Bible, turn with me to Proverbs chapter 3. We find this great writer of wisdom, is sharing with us, kind of gives us this principle for life. And here's what he says. He says, honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing and your vats will brim over with new wine. And what's fascinating here is basically, you know, every time these people in this day would harvest a crop, I mean, that was what they earned. Whether it was grapes, whether it was grain, whether it was pomegranates, whatever it may have been, whenever they harvested a crop, they take that in. At first, they'd give thanks to God. They say, God, you have given everything we have to us. I mean, they were very keenly aware that whatever they lived off of directly came from God. And they turn around and say, God, we're going to give 10% back of whatever you've blessed us with back to you. And it's just what they did. In essence, what they were doing was they were ensuring that they gave God the first and they gave God the best. Because, you know, they understood that God didn't want the leftovers. He didn't want to be remembered at the end. He didn't want to be shortchanged. And so how do we ensure that we honor him? Well, we give the first fruits. It's this idea of giving the first fruits every time I make a paycheck. Now, what's fascinating off this is, you know, sometimes there's, you know, we think, well, I'm going to give at the end of the year. You know, after I get through the year, and then I'm going to make a big contribution or something at the end of the year. Well, why do we think this way? I want to challenge us to this kind of thinking. Whenever we say, well, I'm going to wait till the end of the year, what we're really saying is something bigger might come up, and I might actually need what I'm supposed to give to God. And basically what we're saying is whatever's left after I pay Johnny Visa and Susie MasterCard and J. Crew and Banana Republic and then the country club fees, I mean, whatever's left after all these things, God, then that's what I'm going to give you at the end. And so we'll never be a generous giver. We'll never be a generous giver if we take the approach of saying, what can I afford? I mean, there's no trust in saying, what can I afford, which almost always means, God, I'm going to give you whatever's left over at the end. So that's the first question, what can I afford? The second question is, what can I sacrifice? Now, sacrifice is really interesting because sacrifice is basically us making an intentional decision to put something off for ourselves in order to give to someone else. Now, you know, today we get that. Today's Mother's Day, and for many of us, I mean, I don't know if you think of your mother in this way, but your mother sacrificed for you to be here today. All right, I mean, my mother's here today. She's somewhere in the back. And Mom, thank you for sacrificing for me when you brought me into this life, because before I was born, she had a better figure. All right, I mean, I know she has a great figure today. If she had a better figure, she sacrificed that because she was willing to bring me into this life. I mean, she gave up her lifestyle, some of her free time in the evenings, a good deal of money that she used to make in order to sacrifice for me to come into this world. I mean, she even pushed this like 8-pound, you know, thing through her birth canal and sacrificed an incredible amount of pain in order for me to come and enjoy life. I mean, sacrifice is putting off what I want or what I think I need right now in order for something else. In fact, a better way to say it is putting off something I love for something I love more. And this is a huge, huge concept. In fact, next week we're going to talk about sacrifice. So I'm not going to spend much time on this because next week we're going to be talking about, it's about sacrifice. If we're going to accomplish this God-sized dream, there's got to be sacrifice. And sacrifice is different than saying, I'm going to rearrange my finances a bit so I can make this happen. Sacrifice goes deeper. In fact, one of the reasons we're going to give a whole week to it is because I don't know that we really in the United States of America know what it means to sacrifice. I don't know that we understand because we deny ourselves nothing. And so next week, make sure you're here. I'm going to be sharing a little bit of what Julie and I are sacrificing next week. Some of the things that we're processing through that it's going to require for us to achieve what we feel God's calling us to do. We're still working through that. But I feel like I owe you an explanation if I'm asking you to do the same. So next week, what can I sacrifice? Third question we have to wrestle through is, what can I trust God for? This is fascinating because trust, when you think of this, trust happens when you make a commitment that in order to fulfill it, God will have to show up. Think about that for a moment. Trust is what happens when you make a commitment that in order for God, for you to fulfill it, God will have to show up. This week, one of the things we're asking you to do as a part of this journey is we're asking you to have an open, honest conversation with God about making a financial commitment on June 6th that you will have to trust God to come through on. I mean, I'm not just talking rearranging your finances, but saying, God, what is that thing that you're asking me to bring to this table that if you don't show up in this scenario, then I'm not going to fulfill what I've put on that card? Because, see, there's an enormous difference of saying, God, here's what I know I can do, God, and something that requires God to show up. You know, I've been having some conversations with people through this journey, and people are coming to me kind of saying, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Here's what God's been saying to me. And, you know, and I'm humbled when I hear people talk. In fact, you know, I sometimes just stand back. I'm like, I can't believe that people are wrestling through these things. I had a conversation recently. Somebody said, you know, I'm going to have to close a number more deals over the next 3 years in order for me to give what I feel like God's asking me to give. Somebody said, I'm going to have to sell some additional houses. I'm going to have to bring this much more business into my company in order for me to fulfill the commitment that I feel like God's asking me to make. I mean, this is what trust is. It's saying, I don't know how it is exactly is going to go. I mean, as Julie and I are processing through this, and our family, you know, we're processing through a commitment that basically leaves us completely naked should something go wrong with our house, or should something go wrong with either of our two cars that are 10 years old, by the way. We have 10-year-old cars, and if either of them go, you know, if something major go wrong in the next 3 years, I mean, we're kind of screwed. I mean, we don't have that kind of money, and yet we're saying, God, we're going to trust that you're going to show up because this is what we feel like we're supposed to do. Because here's the deal about trust. Trust is linked with the decision we make before we have all the answers. You know, so many times we're like, oh, I'm trusting God in this. I'm trusting God. Well, I'd ask you the question, are we trusting God or are we just already assured that we know how it's going to work out? Because trust is linked with a decision we make before we have all the answers. You know, one of the first steps in developing trust is just the basic biblical principle of tithing, of giving 10% of our income. And, you know, if you've been coming to Crosspoint for any time at all, I mean, if you've been here a few weeks, if you've been here since we began, you know that you know, we are not about the money you have in your pocket. I mean, that's not been a focus of ours. We believe in changing lives here at Crosspoint, that there's a God through a son that changes lives through Jesus Christ. And when that happens, that our hearts begin to turn toward putting our treasures in heaven. And so we're not just about the money in your pockets. We've proved that over and over again. And yet what we've also proven is that whether you believe in God or not, that the principles that we learn in the Bible are true. The simple principles we learn in the Bible are true. And one of the most basic principles for getting right financially is beginning to give a percentage of your income away. Yes, we got a lunch with somebody from here at Crosspoint, and as soon as we sat down, he addressed me by saying, if I would have told my friends a few years ago that I was having lunch with my pastor, they would have said, you're crazy. So I'm an atheist. My life is about me. I don't believe in these higher beings, this God thing. He said, I was an atheist. I was the ruler of this world, of my little corner of the world. And I said, well, if I would have told you I was having lunch with you as your pastor, as your senior pastor, my friends would have said you're crazy because that was on my never list. And so I guess God's in a crazy way brought both of us together right here. And so he began to share with me how his life has just began to change. And through the influence of his wife and this community, how he's come into this love relationship with this God through Christ. And I was just beginning to change him. And he says, you know, Crosspoint is my family. He said, I don't know where we would be or what we'd be doing if we wouldn't have run across this community. He said, it just changed my life. And then somewhere along the lines, our conversation began to turn financial. He said, you know, the last year and a half of our lives have been the most challenging financial years that I've lived. He said, you know, we have two businesses in our home, and he said, you know, they've both been doing terribly. In fact, you know, one was basically paying for the other to stay open about a year and a half ago, and then we came to the place where we had to close the one, and one of us had to go work for another company because it just wasn't making it. He said, in fact, about a year and a half ago, neither of us was making a paycheck. For about 6 or 7 months, we didn't take a single paycheck. And he said, you know, we're just like every other American. For the first time ever, I had to tap into our savings. I've never had to do that before. He said, we're just struggling to pay the bills, struggling to get by, struggling to keep our business going. And then this was what was fascinating. And then he said, you know what? He said, about a year and a half ago is when we began tithing. He said, it was amidst that deep financial struggle. We never experienced that before. And he said, you know, we were in the middle of the crazy journey, the consume journey. And he said, you know, during the consume journey, we're wrestling with, am I too attached to my stuff, or am I really about being passionate about God? And we were challenged with this idea of tithing, of giving a part of what we make. And he said, I turned to my wife and I said, hey, that's easy. 10% of zero is nothing. So we're going to begin tithing today. So this is a commitment he made to God. He said, we're going to begin tithing right now. And then here's what's fascinating. He said, Kurt, would you know that the next month we began making paychecks again? And crazy, crazy story. He said, and since then, every time we make a paycheck, we tithe off of it. I mean, this isn't about money. This is about trust. It's about, are you willing to trust God? Prophet Malachi, he talks real openly about this. In fact, he talks about how we should approach this. Here's what he says. He says, bring the whole tithe, the whole 10% into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. He says, test me on this. Test me. Trust me in this. Just trust me and see what happens. Test me. It's the only time in the scriptures, one of the only times in the scriptures that God says, just test me. Just test me and see what happens. See if I will not throw open my floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you will not have room enough for it. He said, just test me. Just give it a shot and see what begins to happen. You see, this basic principle of tithing, and this tithing deal, it just smokes out the inner workings of the heart. I mean, it communicates once and for all whether or not we love the God of money more or the God of the heavens and the earth. I mean, it's one of those things that when this begins to happen, we begin to make this shift away from the God of money and into the God of heaven and earth, the Father of Christ, then all of a sudden our hearts just begin to melt. Our lives, all of a sudden our priorities begin to change. And we start really developing this real relationship with the God of heaven instead of the God of money. You know, there's been crazy, crazy stuff happening around here, people. I mean, it's been amazing. I mean, our staff, every time you hit that crazy money button on the webpage and send us an email, our whole staff get the stories. I mean, because we just want our staff team to be encouraged by what's going on. And we have been blown away. Every story that comes in, I mean, there are people that will start off saying, oh, this isn't exciting as some of the ones I've heard. No, every story is exciting because it's what God asked you to do when you actually did it. It's cool, cool stuff. And there's a story I want you to hear today. I want to invite Eric to come join me this morning. And Eric has a really unique story, and the band's going to come as well. And Eric and his wife, Julie, moved to the Fishers community a few months ago, and they began attending Crosspoint here about 2 months ago, around mm-hmm. 8 weeks ago. And welcome, by the way. Great
Thank
to have
you.
You here today.
Good to be here.
And Eric, you might know Eric because Eric has a unique platform. Eric, you know, as we thought about this crazy money thing, you know, we thought, well, we're gonna go out in our community and bless our community. You know, we might give some money online to things that are happening on the other side of the world, and that's been happening. But you know, we had no idea how the impact was going to be shared out of this community. And then I began reading some of Eric's posts. And Eric, by the way, is Eric Allen, the morning show host on K Love Radio. Mm-hmm. If you 101.5, I believe it's on my. Is that right? 101.9.
He's a good
listener. It's number 4 on my dial. Uh-huh. And you see on the screen right here, this is Eric and Lisa, his co-host, and one of our other favorite people in the world, David Crowder. By the way, if you ever wonder where we get most of our music here at Crosspoint, David Crowder writes it and or performs it right there. But Eric took this a step further. In fact, a lot of what Eric shares on the radio, it's a nationally syndicated morning show that goes how far across the country?
It's 44 states and over 5 million people listen a week.
5 million people listen to this guy every week, and so he has a huge, huge platform. And he's a normal guy. I've been learning he's a normal guy, just like me. All right, so Eric, this is his family sitting down in the front
my
right
father-in-law
here.
My father-in-law chiming
this is
in.
His father-in-law right there. Yeah, so Eric, he took it on air. He said, hey, here's what my church asked me to do. And what began to happen as you began to share about this?
I mentioned to Kurt that, you know, that's the trouble of getting to know me, is that anything you say or do, it may end up on the radio because we just kind of live our lives. But we every day we plan for the next show, and then in the morning we kind of have a huddle and we talk about, okay, these are all the things we're going to talk about. And Lisa said to me, do you have anything else to talk about? And I said, well, there's this $5 that's been in my wallet. And it was interesting, backing up a day, I had like a 30-minute drive that I was on, and I had looked in my wallet because I think I was hungry, and I realized I had no money in my wallet except the $5.
And you didn't use it on that, did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't use it.
That's
on
one
that.
Of the rules.
That's right. That would have been not maximum impact. But I really used that 30-minute drive to go, okay, God, what do you really want me to do with this $5? Because I really wanted it to do something that was unique and special. And so the next morning, I had mentioned the $5 in my wallet, and Lisa said, why don't we just talk about it? The plan was we were going to talk about it once, and that was it. And after we did it once, we started getting calls, and we're like, we should talk about this more because this is a bigger thing. And so we just opened it up. You know, if you had $5, you know, given to you for maximum impact to make a difference in your world, how would you use it? And so we started getting flooded with all these calls and all these calls. I mean, people from all over the country, from, you know, from Florida to Arkansas to Kentucky to Oklahoma to Phoenix, just all over the country. It's nationwide. And then we even put it on Facebook, and we are just blown away on our Facebook page. Within that day, we had 250 people respond with different thoughts and ideas. And we got an email that was sent to our correspondence department. We have someone on our team who answers all the emails that come in for the show. And they forwarded one to me, which I thought was really neat, and I ended up forwarding on to the church. And what they wrote was, it spoke to two things that really resonated with me about this whole journey was. It said, Eric has already done great things with his $5 without even spending it. By his place on K-Love, he's been able to challenge each of us as listeners to do something this week with our own $5 or whatever resources God has laid on our hearts. And then it goes on to say, hey, kudos to your pastor for not only just suggesting it, but living it and giving the church's finances in order to do that as well. And so I thought it was neat because I heard from a lot of people who said, you know, this week I'm going to do something with $5. Exactly. And then I had other people come up and comment to me of saying, whatever you do with your money, I want to give to that too. And so my wife and I talked about it, and there was a ministry that we became aware of called the Mocha Club which is not a coffee club. It's
we got to make that distinction because of our coffee.
Yes, I know. Sure. Yeah. It's actually a club. It's a ministry. It's a not-for-profit organization that goes to benefit people in Africa. And the concept behind it is that, you know, you can do a lot with a little. With the cost of 2 mochas a month, you can make a difference, and you can provide all these different resources to people in Africa, whether it's things for women in crisis or abandoned children, orphan children, or people who are suffering from AIDS. And so my wife and I decided that we were going to take the money that we got from Crosspoint and give it towards that. And so I mentioned that, and I already had people responding to me saying, I'm getting involved and I'm giving to that too. And then people even saying, and I've told 10 people to give to this as well. Wow. And the point being is, I think there was just a ripple effect of people being able to come together of doing this. And I have no doubt that the funds that you used, whatever the amount it was, had as great of an impact or more than that. I just have a different platform on it.
Yeah, it's been a cool thing. I mean, you know, we thought this was going to, you know, trickle out into a few neighborhoods around here, and this small little thing make an impact all around the world. And you know, we can talk about impact out there, but I know as we've talked a little over this, that for you guys, for you and Julie, this has also had some really personal impact as well.
Yeah, well, Caleb is not for profit, and so we do fundraisers twice a year, and I empathize with any organization that has to ask for resources. We hate doing it. I mean, it's not fun to listen to, and it's even more painful to do, to ask for money. But when you started the Crazy Journey segment, it was right in the middle of our pledge drive. Mm-hmm. And so as you're talking about, you know, none of it we have belongs to us. It all belongs to God. I'm sitting there going, preach it, preach it, preach it. Because I work for not-profit. Give money, give money, give money. And then something happened during the course of that, though, was I felt like, and you can even ask my wife, it was like God saying, no, I'm talking to you. I'm talking to everybody else, but I'm talking to you. And so it really brought back to a lot of things that God has done in my life in the course of our marriage in terms of finances. And that is that, it's amazing that you're talking about trust today, because that was the thing that really hit me during this, is that when I look back over our lives, so many things, it seems like we've moved a lot, so some of the things tie into houses. But I can remember about 7 years ago, we had moved to California, but we were selling a home in Illinois, and there were things going on with the house. And I remember just holding that house back when it comes to the finance. There was so much fear there. And I remember God really saying to me, do you trust me? Do you trust me with the biggest possession that you have? I mean, you'll trust me with all these others. It's really easy to trust God with all these small things, but do you trust me with the biggest thing? And through that, I learned that, and I'm constantly having to be reminded of that too, of God, do I trust you? Do I trust you with the most important things in our life? So this past week, I took off, and really one of the main things that my wife Julie and I wanted to really settle on was, what are we doing with our finances? And beyond just kind of getting those in order, that house in order, we want to really see what we can do in terms of the Crazy campaign. Because, as you said, we've been here for 8 weeks, but we really